Welcome to Pod Warp, let's say 1999. We are back. This has been quite a while since we've all been here. I hope I can remember everybody's names.
Do you know
We
your
have,
name?
huh?
Do you know your name?
Mar Mac Mackey's Mac Mac Ma Ma is that
Mork?
right? Merk
Mork?
Merk
It's your
Mork
name is Mork Mindy.
Mork Mindy. I'll go with that. Yes.
There's a middle initial in there. There's an N. It's Mork N
Mork
Mindy.
and Mindy. Yes, there we
Yes.
go. All right. Well, that is Ben Padden. He is back
That
with
is.
us.
Hello.
We also have David Davis is with
Hello.
us. We have Jim Francis is back with us.
Hello.
And Tom Truskowski.
Hello.
How long has it been since we all have talked?
It has been, gosh, I think we were saying earlier, like 5 years, we think, maybe. I mean, it's been longer for me because I haven't done the show since, I want to say 2009, I think was the last time I was on it.
Probably
So for
about
some of us, it's been as much as 7 years.
all I know is I just woke up from cryo sleep, so this is
So you're caught up. That's great. It's good to hear.
So as far as he was concerned, the last episode he did was yesterday.
Perfect.
Yes. And when did we start this? It was
I want to say it was 2008.
okay.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
So it's been 8 years since we started.
I think the last episode we uploaded was in 2013, but it was recorded the year before that.
Well, we're nothing if not on the ball. We're a
Exactly.
well-oiled, well-organized machine.
Yes.
Well, I guess probably the first thing to do is that we've been away a long time. Let's just reintroduce ourselves. I'm guessing we probably have a lot of new audience. I don't know how much carryover we have, but catch up. What have you been up to? Let's start with David. What are you doing? What are you?
What are you doing, David?
Yeah,
David,
right
what are you
now
doing?
I'm wearing a blue coat, orange socks. No. I'm sorry.
Hilarious.
Hilarious.
Classic goofs.
No, I've been doing pretty well. I did a bunch of conventions last year. I got my bachelor's degree. I'm getting ready to apply for my master's in English. And I've just been cranking on Cosmic Dash.
Now, is that a
Congratulations.
euphemism for something that would be more overtly discussed in a more R-rated podcast?
No, it's basically referring to myself working myself as a slave to do the comic.
Oh, cool. Okay, that's easy. Well, say easy.
So, Mark, let's start with you. Who are you and what have you been doing?
Start with me. Oh, geez.
We're going to retro. We're
But
retroactively
let's uh,
starting
and
from
let's
Mark.
uh for
We'll
since
fix
most
that
of
in the
our
edit.
previous audience are probably dead of old age by now, let's pretend that our audience doesn't know who we are and
Exactly.
let
Yeah.
them know what we do and which comics we've been involved with and what we've been doing and what we're doing now.
Speaking of which, before we move on, David, why don't you give your website at this point?
Oh,
Let's
think
let
like
that be.
that.
You can read my comic Cosmic Dash at cosmicdash.com.
No, just to confirm, that is the word dash. People shouldn't type cosmic and then type a
Yes,
hyphen,
it's the
and
word
it's.
DASH.
Nice.
Yes.
Me, I'm probably best known for my comic Zortik. I've also done the comic Saucer Seekers. I write Abby's Agency. Pretty much everything can be found at the hub, entireprizeenterprises.com. And that branches off to all my stuff. I've basically kind of changed the way I'm doing Zortik to I'm kind of following the BBC model of following doing TV series and just waiting until I have an entire season and just doing it whenever I want rather than a regular schedule. So I just finished doing a full year run of Zortik, and next time I have a good story, I'll start it up again and do another specific run of a specific storyline. I'm also been doing some I'm doing a little bit more writing, just prose. I have a kid's book out called Agent Elf, and I'm working on a sequel to that. I also have a role-playing card game called Steam Spies, which has been picking up steam.
Ha ha!
Yeah,
Tom's
see?
let's
See what
play.
I did there? The basic premise is it's a role-playing game for two people. So if people get older, have trouble getting groups together, this is something that you can pull out and just play with two people.
Perfect for Valentine's Day.
It is. Good point. Mm-hmm. That is.
Is this episode going to go up in time for Valentine's Day? Is the question.
Well,
depends on how much editing it needs, and if if we have a web page to put it on yet.
There's a point. Do we still have the PodWarp website? Does that exist?
It exists, but the database has issues.
Oh, well, that's good. That's great to hear. This is how on the ball we have been. Hey, Tom, why don't you tell us what the hell you've been up to with your life?
Yeah, Tom.
Well, been busy, put it that way. After many years of updating Station V3 daily for a while, and just did not have the time to update, and still don't have the time to update, but I'm doing it anyway, and it's back as whatever became of Station V3, still at stationv3.com, just picking up after an unexplained gap, and everything's different, but everything's the same.
So like Red Dwarf, then?
Something like that.
Or like PodWarp 1999.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with that show.
Yeah.
How about you, Ben? What have you been doing?
Oh, that's a big question. In 2013, I launched a web series called Port Center, which looks at interesting and unique ports, conversions, re-releases of old video games. I've been doing that on and off now for the last 3 years, and I'm about to start production on a new season. Jump Leads ended in 2013 very unceremoniously. Unfortunately, our artist, Jajar, or Kha, however you choose to pronounce it, he got very busy with a lot of freelance work and couldn't devote the time to the comic anymore. So we had another guy by the name of Mr. Philby come in and finish off what ended up being our very last issue of the comic. But I relaunched, I did a soft relaunch in September as an audio play. We're gonna reboot it as a monthly sci-fi comedy audio play podcast that is obviously going to be released entirely free as a podcast, much like this, but with writing and sound design and a cast. The first episode's already up. The second episode is being edited. We had hoped to have that up much, much sooner, but my co-producer lived right on top of the Porter Ranch gas leak. So he was, if you're not familiar with what's happened, basically there's this huge methane gas leak in Porter Ranch in California, in the north end of LA, that is basically poisonous. So he had to relocate his entire family. But episode 2 is going to go up, if not later this month, then early in March. And then we're going to release one episode a month, every month, until my hands fall off. But there's an amazing cast for Jump Leads now. I'm voicing Llewellyn because I figure that the sarcastic one should be British. We gender swapped Meanie. Meanie is now a woman voiced by the immensely, immeasurably talented Marissa Mizell. And then basically every other voice in the show is voiced by either actor Chris Dorman, who, again, just unquantifiably talented. And also one of the other voice actors is Dino Andrade, who, if you play video games, he was the voice of the Scarecrow in Arkham Asylum. He was the Nimrod and Mechatork and a bunch of the Death Knight gnomes in World of Warcraft. He's all over the place. I think we had him on the show at one point a thousand years ago as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So that's more or less what I've been up to. I have had a couple of other webcomic adventures that didn't go anywhere. And I'm in pre-production on another web series, which I'll talk about more when we near production. And I talk a lot. I think I feel like I've dominated the last 5 minutes of the conversation.
That's okay. Oh, Jim, your turn. What's up?
Hey. Well, for those who don't know, I'm Jim Francis, and I'm the creator of the Outsider webcomic, which you can find at wellofsouls.com/outsider. Since we were last doing this, I have become a full-time freelance artist, and so I spent a lot of time working on a number of projects, including the independent science fiction strategy game called Stars in Shadow, which is nearing release, and you can see more information about that at starsinshadow.com. But I have also resumed updating Outsider more frequently than I have in the past. There was a little bit of a hiatus there. So that's what I'm doing now.
Neat.
Nice.
See, now I feel like I definitely rambled too long, because you guys were like, hey, I'm working on this. Oh, yeah, I'm working on this. Yeah, I've been doing this. And I'm like, over the past 5 years, I have produced many works.
Sounded as you.
And yet, Ben, in all that time, did you give us a website?
No. Jump Leads is still where it's always been. It's jump-leads.com. There's a landing page that'll either take you to the webcomic or the audio plays. Ports Center can be found at portscenter.tv. It's like Sports Center, but without the S at the front. And I can be found online at benpadden.net, because .com was taken.
Really?
Well, I had owned .com like 1,000 years ago. No, that's wrong. I didn't own it. A friend of mine bought it for me as a birthday present and then let it lapse by mistake. So it got snatched up by a company that sells septic tank cleaner to Russians. So it was awesome. No longer available. So, but I retained ownership of benpadden.net, so that's what I use for everything.
So you're sure that's not your evil twin from an alternate universe who runs a septic service for Russians? Or,
I already know who my evil twin is. He's 6 months younger than me, I think, and he's a personal trainer.
He's not your twin then, if he's younger.
Well, it could be time dilation. You don't know. You know, if one twin stays in England and the other one goes to America and then goes back, then the time
I'm sorry for bringing logic into the sci-fi podcast.
But yeah, he's a personal trainer, and occasionally I get his email because he gives my email address out to people.
Wonderful.
Nice. Okay, so I guess that's kind of getting us up to the present. So what about the future? What do we want to do with this podcast? What do we have to offer our fine listeners?
Oh, I actually know the answer to this one. It is nothing. We we don't contribute anything of value to society. And really, the return of Podwarp 1999, 2000, The Next Generation, the Starseeker Chronicles, is more or less as an ego-stroking exercise. None of this is true. None of this is true. I think we want to... Because when we launched Podwarp 99, it was about discussing sci-fi webcomics and the production of sci-fi webcomics. And I think that a lot of us have kind of... Our sci-fi reach has expanded a little. Like, you know, some of us are working on games and some of us are working on phenomenally wonderful, well-written, scripted audio play series that are being released as free podcasts. Some of us are still doing webcomics and some of us are not doing those anymore. So I think it makes sense for the show moving forward to touch upon where sci-fi is now in the kind of pop culture zeitgeist, not just in terms of like geeky niche stuff, but generally. But it also makes sense to discuss the creation of science fiction and, to a certain extent, fantasy. I think it makes sense to talk about that creation process and the thought process that goes that goes into, you know, writing a sci-fi story, into drawing a sci-fi comic, into producing a science fiction, you know, TV show or film or web series or whatever. I think that's kind of, unless I completely misinterpreted all of our emails and we're actually going to, you know, share, you know, cooking recipes, I think that's kind of the direction. We can still share recipes. I have a great recipe for like firefly-shaped cookies.
I thought we had talked about just doing cat videos, but, you know, that's another way to go.
Are science fiction cat videos.
That's right.
And science fiction recipes.
Via podcast.
Oh, something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing that we want to look at, because you talked about the diversification of sci-fi on the internet, that's a very sci-fi sort of thing because it's all about technology. So a lot of it is like, how can we take advantage of different technology and platforms to distribute science fiction content? So that, I think that's also kind of what we're going to be focusing on, right?
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing. I think that's something that we could even go into more detail on in this very episode, considering that this episode is about the rebirth of Podwarp and what we're going to be talking about going forward. I think spending, you know, 15 to 20 to 50 to 85 minutes discussing the proliferation of science fiction via digital distribution.
Digitalis.
I did have a few drinks before we started. Awesome. And it was all Sprite. So Yeah, I think that's a fantastic conversation. I think like how many of the technologies that we use today to distribute our respective sci-fi content and to digest the content of others, how many of those were inspired by the sci-fi of yesterday? You know, I think that that's an absolutely fascinating area of conversation. Let's have that conversation.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. And I've probably talked about this at some point in one of our previous shows, but you know, if you look at like old concepts of the future and how computers were going to kind of destroy our humanity and, you know, destroy the arts, and it seems like the opposite is true. You know, if you're a garage band, if you're a cartoonist, if you're a writer, you can get on the internet and achieve a much broader audience. So in a lot of ways, technology has really created a boom for your homespun artistic endeavors.
Yeah, I think the organized music industry would have something, have a different point of view on that.
Same with any organized, yeah. The print, you know, publishers are freaking out about ebooks.
Absolutely.
You know, comic book companies are freaking out about webcomics. That's part of the game.
Right, you know what the next big model is going to be, though? Apps.
Of course.
Oh, apps have been that's been the model for even. I mean, apps kind of started to pop up in, you know, 2007, 2008 when the iPhone became a thing. But that's kind of proliferated to a prolific degree. Let's just use that word and just unfold it further and further until it, you know, eventually envelops the planet. I think that the thing about digital distribution is not just, I think the music industry can say it's costing us money, think how much money we're losing to piracy, and they're wrong, because someone downloading an album doesn't necessarily equate a lost sale in the same way that, you know, it's not stealing from a record shop, it's, oh, I now have a copy of this album that I didn't buy. But I would also argue that people who are, you know, downloading music for free weren't going to buy it in the first place. But that's not always the case. And that's kind of a separate... I think that's a separate conversation. Right. So let's edit that part out because it's irrelevant.
Yeah, the record stores are closing all over the place. So yeah, it is affecting their sales. But
well, I mean, that's true. But
the point is, it's the distributors who are getting shut out. I mean, the artists can sell now directly to the consumers, so they can actually, you know, keep that money instead of giving it to some big record company. So it's both good and bad.
Same with comic book stores.
Yeah.
Or booksellers.
Booksellers?
Sellers.
Sellers, okay.
Yes.
That word got mangled in headphones.
Yes. You know, like basements where you keep books.
Yeah, that makes sense. that makes too much sense. I think that I can't even articulate today. Digital distribution is what makes the world go. I mean, I think about artists like like some of you guys, and then people like, you know, Chris Straub as a cartoonist and Jonathan Coulton as a musician. You know, these are people who would not necessarily have been able to build a career using old, you know, the models of the, you know, the 60s and 70s of eight and 80s, where you'd have to send your stuff to a, you know, to a syndicate or try to get, you know, the attention of a record label and then hope that they buy, you know. And the other advantage is that people can now create the stories that they want to tell without editorial interference, which is fantastic, because it means that you could do, you know, there could be a modern day Kathy equivalent that isn't Kathy, or that is basically Kathy, but where she says fuck instead of ack, and that's it. That's the only change, and it's the best comic.
It's true.
I read it.
I want someone to create a plugin for Chrome that just, if you're reading Kathy on gocomics.com, it scans the comic for the word ack and replaces it with a speech bubble that says fuck. Then that's the only thing it does.
Could you do that for all of those? What is the technical term for the when it's the asterisks and oh, question mark and dollar sign, blah blah blah, you know, the cartoon swear words?
It's like a reverse onomatopoeia where it's garbling the sound rather than making it legible.
It's just inherently funnier if you do it over Kathy.
That's true. That is true.
I just like the idea of, like, you know, Kathy, but with anger management issues and possibly Tourette's. I think that's a hilarious concept. Now I can't get it out of my head. I need that comic.
That is true. So I think, you know, I mean, these are great. You know, this is exactly the kind of discussions that we need to be having, and we need to be bouncing off each other. I think this is great for what we should be bringing to our audience and helping make them smarter.
This is the thing as well, because we need smart people listening to this podcast.
Well, yeah.
And if they don't arrive smart, we need to make them smart.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, I found some old show notes, and way back in episode 24, we had discussed beaming comics into people's brains.
Ooh. How did that pan out? Now, what year was that? That would have been 2008 when we recorded that one, right? Like 2008, 2009?
Maybe 2010.
Now, I don't feel like the technology is there yet.
No.
But...
We had also discussed aluminum foil hats.
Well, those are still very much in vogue. You can buy those from any high street fashion store. But the technology to beam... It's interesting because that technology doesn't exist yet, but we have learned, in the last 8 or so years, we've learned so much more about the brain and how it works, to the point where we're now able to... you know, there was an article about two people, they either flew a plane or a helicopter or something using just their minds. Like it was a goddamn Jaeger from Pacific Rim. Like they were drift compatible and they made this helicopter fly.
So wait, you're telling me that in a couple of years I'll be able to have my own Jaeger?
You could have your own Jaeger. You could be a Jaegermeister.
Living the dream.
Living the dream. Who would you be drift... Oh, wouldn't it be so embarrassing if you're like, you and your wife... hypothetically, not you specifically, but hypothetically, a person and their spouse were like, oh my god, I can't wait for Jaegers to be a thing. Oh, we're going to have so much fun. I guarantee you we're drift compatible. And then finally they become available commercially. They save up all their money. They buy a Jaeger. They sit down, they plug in, and all the lights blow off. They are not compatible. And this is how they discover that they are trapped in a loveless marriage. A marriage that they thought the Jaeger would fix, but ironically, it just tore them apart.
Well, imagine finding out about your partner's infidelity by going through a drift with them.
Oh no.
Because you know, when you're having trouble in your marriage, you think, you know, a giant fighting robot would definitely spice this up a bit.
Well, not so much as two giant fighting robots. That would spice up a
it's
troubled
marriage.
It's the
sci-fi equivalent of, if we have a baby, things will cool down.
Yes, yes.
A giant 30-story tall steel baby.
Yes. Birthed by machinery. Which is also what we should have called this podcast.
Damn it.
Yes.
We can go back and edit that.
It's way back to episode one.
So it's going to be Pod Warped Remastered Birth by Machinery.
1999, 2000.
The next generation.
The next generation.
1980.
1980.
Yep.
The Shape Giver Prophecy. Whatever it was I said. Great. A whole 20 minutes ago.
So one of the things we talked about is actually collecting questions from the listeners. And,
we did.
And ironically, we haven't even started yet, and we actually have a question, don't we?
Yes, we do.
We do. We put out feelers on the internet. And incidentally, if you want to email us or tweet us a question for future episodes, we will be taking some time to discuss your questions, if you have questions about science fiction or fantasy, or about the creation of science fiction or fantasy, if you're a writer or an artist or are involved in the creative process of your own sci-fi thing and you have a question, or as a reader or listener or viewer of sci-fi, you have questions about the making of sci-fi, tweet them to us. Just use the hashtag PodWarp and we will we'll save the best ones for the next episode. Or you can email us at edit this part out and put our email address in here.
Or you could email us at podwarp1999@comicostrich.com.
Yes. Or you could email us at that. Just cut from where I said insert email address here to your voice saying email address.
Nope, we're keeping it.
Okay, so who has our question?
I'll take care of that.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so our question comes from Twitter user @thatghostygal. And her question is, where does fantasy end and sci-fi begin?
That is a great question.
Well, I already have my answer.
Well, go ahead.
Okay.
My idea is that you can have technology in fantasy, but when technology becomes the driving focus of a narrative, I think that moves it into science fiction territory. Because anytime you see technology in a fantasy project, it's usually like an artifice, sort of artifact stuff that's just kind of interesting, but it's not a driving element.
So the question always then becomes, what about Star Wars?
Yeah, I was about to say, like, Star Wars,
it's not driven.
It's very overtly fantasy, but it has, pardon me, let me start that sentence again without belching in the middle of it. it's very overtly fantasy, but it has the trappings of science fiction, space travel, starships, lasers, swords, laser swords.
But that setting can't exist without the technology and the hyperspace lanes and that sort of thing. With, like, say something like, I'm trying to remember a project, like The Legend of Zelda, one of the recent games, Skyward Sword, had a sequence of little clockwork robots. The world could exist without those, and you could still have the story, but they're not vital to the narrative.
That's an interesting approach. But then you get things like, take for example Farscape. Farscape is set within a starship that is literally, it's a living being. It's not technological, although it appears to be technological. It is in fact a living being. Same for Doctor Who. The TARDIS are grown, not built. They are far more organic in design, particularly during Eccleston and Tennant's era of the show.
But what about biotech, bro?
Yeah, I mean,
snap, crackle, and pop, sir.
Yeah, technology doesn't have to be mechanical to be science fiction. I mean, It all depends on your definition. Some people consider Star Wars to be fantasy, and it certainly has fantasy elements, but it has spaceships. And so, basically, if it has hardware, and even though it has mystical elements, it uses the trappings of science to explain, you know, the Force and whatnot. And so it's properly, I think.
Only the prequels. Only that first episode with the medical elements. Does anybody pay attention to that?
Oh, everyone loved that.
Oh, yeah. That was, as people kind of consider that to be the defining moment of the entire Star Wars saga.
But, okay, well, now we're talking about this, but what about, like, contemporary urban fantasy? You know, there is technology there. There are, you know, cell phones and cable TV.
Things like Once Upon a Time, The Tenth Kingdom, where it is very clearly fantasy, but also set in, at the time, modern America.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, this is...
not futuristic technology, but...
I think... the key difference between science fiction and fantasy is I think that good science fiction tries to have a go of explaining the science behind what they're doing. The reason why, science fiction, like, for example, Back to the Future is science fiction because they at least made a go of explaining how the flux capacitor works. It's nonsense, but they have had a go. Star Trek at its best when it's being, you know, philosophical. Again, they have a go at explaining how the science... like, we know how the transporter is supposed to work because it breaks us down to our core component atoms, digitizes them, and then reconstructs them like a bullshit 3D printer on the planet's surface, where there should be a receiver, but there often isn't, thus rendering the entire process moot, and basically you're killing yourself and making a copy, which is another philosophical question entirely. I think science. I think when you get into stuff when you get to stuff like Star Wars, where this is a sword that is also a laser. Why? Don't think about it too much. I think at that point you veer more into science fantasy territory, because when they're not trying to come up with logical scientific reasons for why stuff exists, with the obvious exception of midichlorians, which are a 100% cast iron explanation for how the Force works.
But I don't think that's necessarily... I mean, I understand what you're saying, but the best fantasy is very well defined and almost scientific in how it deals with magical forces and various kinds of things like that. So I'm not sure that the you know, some in a lot of fantasy, they just, oh, it's mystical, and they kind of hand wave. Sometimes they get very deep into how it works, and that becomes an important part of the story. So really, science fiction and fantasy are all speculative fiction, and it's really one, it's more of a genre and a tone as opposed to a different kind of fiction.
You are going to be shocked to hear that I actually disagree with that assessment. Because okay. Here's the thing. I think fantasy, you can have, for example, take the Discworld, take Terry Pratchett's Discworld novels. There are rules for how magic works on the Discworld. Those are set rules, they are established. The people who are magic users on the Discworld know how magic works. But those rules don't necessarily apply to our rules. We cannot take the way that magic works on the Discworld and extrapolate from that towards future technology. Whereas with science fiction, you look at things like the tricorder, you look at things like the communicator and the teleporter. Those are things that, even though they're fictional, have a grounding in real-ish pseudoscience that people in the real world have gone, okay, let's see if we can make that. And oh, we have. We've got cell phones now. We have, you know, we are starting to explore things like faster than light travel and matter transportation. We're starting to make some headway in those areas.
And I think, but a lot of stuff from science fiction is total nonsense. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
You're talking about good science fiction. What about bad science fiction that doesn't put that much effort into it?
But not only that, but not necessarily bad science fiction. But if you look at like Dune or The Matrix. They're based on some things that are have nothing to do with science. Right. You know, telepathy is a science fiction thing. It's got nothing to do with the real world. The laws of thermodynamics say that you can't get net positive energy off of people using them as a power source. That's total fantasy. But those are clearly not considered to be fantasy works, although maybe some people would say that Dune is. But
does it depend on how the thing is treated in the context of the story? Like, I imagine if there's technology, but if it's treated as mysticism, like something in, say, like the Shannara Chronicles, would that be... That kind of blurs the line between science fiction and fantasy, but because in the universe they treat it as kind of like a mystical thing, that would make it fantasy.
Well, I think it's an arbitrary line. And so, you know, like I say, some people would say that Star Wars is fantasy, and some people would say it's science fiction. And it really depends on who you are and what your definition is.
In that case, Star Wars would be considered both. I mean, the best answer would be Star Wars is considered both, because if, for those who believe in the Force, it's a mystical thing. But for those people like the Han Solos, there's the technology, and that makes it science fiction. So it's...
Well, I like to call it space fantasy, because it's not really... There's not a lot of science there, even though there are spaceships flying around.
That's fair.
Go ahead. No. You say your thing. I've talked a lot already, because I'm done.
I was... Yeah, I always ran into an interesting dilemma with my comic, Saucer Seekers. The comic was about two men who sit on top of their van and watch for UFOs. And everybody constantly referred to that as science fiction. Whereas I could go out and sit on my car and look for a UFO. There's nothing extraordinary about that. If they were actually finding UFOs, I could see that. But I was always kind of startled that type of thing would be classified as science fiction.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, is it just a matter of topics that are addressed?
That's got to be partly it. I mean, the fact that they're looking for UFOs makes it science fiction. If they were going out in the woods and looking for elves, then maybe it would be fantasy.
And if they were going out looking for cowboys, it may not be
technically science fiction, but I think in terms of the audience, it would
probably... So what is Ghostbusters?
Ghostbusters is a prototypical hybrid of the hero's journey as seen through the lens of...
Let's keep it fantasy and science fiction.
It's comedy. How's that? There you go.
It's speculative fiction.
It's we'll see, 90 guys, minutes of yucks and hucks.
or like horror is another branch of speculative fiction.
Here's the thing. You have ghost and paranormal, which is typically associated with fantasy, and yet you have the proton packs, which they explain through scientific nonsense. So what is it?
It's using science fiction to fight fantasy.
It's a Bill Murray movie.
Well, again, this is why I'm saying fantasy and science fiction. I mean, you could group things into either one, but modern horror has supernatural elements, but it's modern, so you know, and often uses technology. Science fiction, not really. Fantasy, not really. It's horror. Well, so Ghostbusters is funny horror, I guess. But
well, let's face it, any genre can be kind of blurred with other genres. I mean, it's yeah. science fiction, it's fantasy, and it's comedy. You know, I mean, a lot of dramas have comedy. A lot of, you know, you could have a sports movie, romance. You know, there's stuff. You know, having a, you know, trying to label a thing with a specific genre is problematic anyway.
Well, I'm just doing it for the sake of the conversation because we're kind of like, well, okay, if something is primarily, is getting back to the saucer seekers thing, you know, if they're investigating UFOs, then it's science fiction. If they're investigating gnomes in the woods, it's fantasy. But what if you have that film where you have the paranormal fantasy and then you have the science fiction? Which one would that be in that case, if you had to pick one?
I think it's a tragedy.
There you go.
Legitimate tragedy. Ghostbusters is a tragedy. It is a tragedy from start to finish. It is about a bunch of people who work at a university who lose their jobs. One of them then sinks his entire life savings, takes out 3 mortgages on his family home to start a business that at the end of the movie actually has resulted in the partial destruction of New York. And then you learn by the start of Ghostbusters 2 that they went out of business. So,
but can you count Ghostbusters 2 in that if you're talking about the single movie as a tragedy?
I still think it's a tragedy because the massive release of Ghost of the Energy occurs as a direct result of them storing it in one place and then Dickless going and shutting it down. Like, that all happens because of them. It's like, think about Raiders of the Lost Ark. That is clearly a fantasy, but it's also a tragedy because Indiana Jones is superfluous for the narrative. Like, any of that stuff could have happened in that story without his presence.
When the Nazis open up the Ark,
yeah,
everybody's dead. So
yeah, and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is a tragedy because, you know,
it just is.
It just is. Ghostbusters, if you think about it, here's the thing. They say comedy is tragedy plus time. All films have time in
them. Okay, Mel Brooks.
All films take place over a period of time, usually between 90 to 120. All comedy films are funny.
Hold on, hold it, right? Hold on.
The whiteboard behind you writing this shit down.
You can reverse engineer and break down any movie to fundamentally be a tragedy.
He's just drawing bubbles around, like, fantasy, sci-fi, comedy, yes. Tragedy, and, like, drawing lines to link them up.
Venn diagram.
It's all yeah. Like, newspaper cuttings on my wall and, like, bits of string and pins. There's a mashed potato carving of the opening sequence from Robin Hood Men in Tights where they're burning down the village, and I'm like, this means something.
It's all part of the genre conspiracy.
The genre-spiracy.
Yes.
Everything's a tragedy. It's all tragic.
Well, because we always die at the end.
Yeah,
it's like any biographical picture is always a tragedy because he always dies at the end.
Yeah, I mean, look, Beauty and the Beast, Sleeping Beauty, like these stories end with, and then they lived happily ever after, which is a lie because one of even assuming that they had long happy lives, at the end of that, one or both of them dies.
Yes, both of them. Ultimately.
Well, they both die, but one of them is presumed... Unless
died first, yeah.
Happens,
one of them died
one
first,
of them
right.
Dies first. The other one has to watch or
not
hear
Highlander.
About Highlander. Well, no, Highlander is the biggest tragedy of all, because if there can be only one, then that means that there'll only be one immortal at the end of the universe when everything collapses in on itself and there is nothing but the void.
Yeah,
there'll be
nothing
but the void, and, I don't know, Herschel the Cloud.
So is the solution at the end of every movie to have someone invent an immortality potion? That way it never ends up as a tragedy?
So you're just saying that you have to retcon an immortality potion to the end of every movie?
Exactly.
Mrs.
Oh, look
Mrs.
what I found Fox. In this chest in the attic. Oh, well, there we go. We can live forever.
Well, just change the ending to And they all became vampires and lived happily ever after.
This is why time is important. You don't try to have you don't try to wrap up every event till the end of time at the end of your movie or story. You pick a point and stop.
Yes.
But with franchises, we can't do that anymore. They just go on and on and on.
Yep. Oh, like Die Hard. Yes. Oh, Die Hard doesn't make any sense. Die Hard is now science fiction. Like, that's literally what it has become. Like, I watched the first Die Hard a few weeks ago when Alan Rickman had the temerity to pass away like a fucking selfish dick.
R.I.P.
He did not live happily ever after.
He did not live happily ever after.
He lived happily ever after up to the point where he died.
I don't think he was happy about dying. I don't think anyone's like, you know what, I'm all right with this. I think that we cut ourselves into thinking that's possible. But Alan Rickman is dead, and I watched Die Hard. That's the chain of events that happened, and we have to acknowledge that. And that first movie, like, he's like, Bruce Willis's character, who I'm blanking on the name of right now.
John McClane.
John McClane, thank you. Why was I blanking on that? That's like pop culture 101 taught by Professor John McClane.
Turn in your nerd card.
Turn in my nerd card. But yeah, like that first movie, you know, he's walking on glass, he's bleeding, he's in pain, he's not happy. And then in the new one, he's like throwing motorcycles at people because he's run out of bullets. And I'm not treading any new ground by making this observation. I mean, this observation has been made by 1,000 podcasts before us, and it'll be made by 1,000 more after us. But Die Hard has become science fiction because it's turned its leading character into fucking Superman. Which I guess actually makes it science fantasy.
Yeah. So I guess then the question is, what are superhero movies? Are they science fiction or are they fantasy? They want to be science fiction, but they're really fantasy.
I would argue that it depends on the superhero. For example, Guardians of the Galaxy is technically a superhero movie, but it is, I would say it is grounded more in science fantasy. And that's something we haven't really talked about in this conversation, is the spaces where science fiction and fantasy meet. That is science fantasy. It's something that purports to be science, but they don't. Like, Doctor Who is science fantasy, because we're never going to know exactly how the TARDIS works. The sonic screwdriver has changed so many times over the last 53 years that, you know, it may as well be a fucking magic wand. Like, we're never going to get explanations for how these devices actually work. But they exist, and it's purported to be science. That's where the fantasy element comes in. It becomes science fantasy. You could make an argument, I think, for Lord of the Rings being science fantasy. You'd be wrong, but you could make that argument. I realize, as I was saying it, that's the stupidest thing I've ever said. I'm going to go to Liberty.
Not entirely,
well,
now I
kind of
want to do that. What I was just see if I can bullshit my way through it.
All right, go for it. It's all you.
Okay, so it... technology does affect that universe because of Mordor and the fact that they're like mining and they're smithing and they're developing that like kind of weird steampunky technology that you see.
No. I'm gonna go even further. The whole adventure starts because Gandalf rolls up in a wagon being pulled by a horse. If they hadn't invented wagons, none of those stories could have taken place. Therefore, Lord of the Rings is science fiction because of the science of the wagon.
A World War II movie has technology in it. That doesn't make it science fiction. It has to be speculative technology. Medieval technology is not speculative.
Wolfenstein is science fiction. Hellboy is science fantasy.
Yeah, Wolfenstein has, you know, demons in it.
Science fiction.
Does Wolfenstein have demons?
It does, yes.
I've not played since, like, the DOS version.
Well, it has undead in it, let's put it that way.
The original, so like, Wolfenstein 3D is science fiction, right? It's only after like the newer ones they started to bring in the demonology aspect of the narrative. Am I right, or am I just making shit up?
The original Wolfenstein 3D was just a World War II thing. It wasn't science fiction or fantasy.
No, because it had Mecha Hitler in it. I'm not making that up.
No, I know Mecha Hitler's in there.
Mecha Hitler's real, man.
Did we have different? I admit that I was raised in an entirely different country.
Who do you think Hitler was drift compatible with?
Well, Hermann Göring, clearly.
I never got to the end of Wolfenstein 3D. So
Goebbels is. I'll tell you who has. He was not. You know, actually, you know, he would have been drift compatible with Stalin if they had been able to just sit down and talk. They had much more in common than they would have liked to admit.
So basically,
what I'm getting out of this is basically every story needs to be pretty much individually analyzed as to
its genre.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Although obviously some are more easily categorized than others.
Yeah, sure, of course.
That is absolutely fair. And I think the other thing we've also learned is that every story is fundamentally a tragic one.
Well, yeah.
If you're Ben Padden, yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying this is a pessimistic worldview that I have. I'm not, I don't mean to imply that I'm a negative person, because I'm not as negative as I used to be. I consider myself a very positive, optimistic, hopeful person. And this is despite the fact that I am presently technically homeless. I consider myself to be a bright soul. But you have to break things down to their core components. We're born, we live, we die. The bit in a movie is the bit that we get to see where they live, and then they die shortly thereafter. So we have to acknowledge, like, even Stardust. I love Stardust. That is probably one of my favorite things that Neil Gaiman has ever written. It is a beautiful movie, a princess bride for the modern era. But the end of that movie, spoiler alert, the boy and the girl become stars, they live in the night sky. They are going to burn out after some millions of years. Like, even that immortality is fleeting for them. They're going to die. Tragedy.
Now I want to cry. Thank you.
Great.
Okay, whatever.
Yep.
But isn't that kind of one of the points of literature? Is by not showing that part, you're reducing the story to the non-tragedy part.
The unspoken part of every story is, and then at some point they died, and then their civilization fell, and then their star burned out, and then the universe came to the end. That's not what's in the story.
Well, that's not true, because they're fictional characters.
Right.
I mean, yeah, Robin Hood has died, they're still making movies.
Our universe will eventually perish, which means that theirs will perish with ours, whether we want it to or they want it to or not.
Or even if they live in a different universe, presumably that one has physical laws and cannot exist forever either. But
yeah, I mean, this is true. In a closed system, all things tend towards entropy.
Yes.
Including the Millennium Falcon.
True.
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert indeed. I think we've probably... I don't think there's anything else we can say about this particular topic.
I think we've pretty well covered it.
I think we've covered it. I think this has been a solid reunion.
I would be revisiting the topic, actually, like, after we've done some, like, research. I think that would help out quite a bit.
You mean, like, instead of just, like, spur-the-moment recording, like, actually plan what we're going to do and discuss for a half-hour to 45-minute podcast?
Yeah, I think that would actually be really cool.
Yeah.
That's nonsense. I don't know how that could possibly work.
That's crazy talk. Who let the new guy in? Yeah. What is it?
I could point out at this point that you know, the forum still exists and people are free to go on and completely disagree with us about this.
That's true.
In the meantime, I'm going to thank you, our listeners, for listening to this episode. If you are a long-term fan, let us know. Shoot us a tweet. The Podwarp 1999 Twitter account does still exist. I don't know that any of us have the passwords for it, but you can tweet to Podwarp 1999 or just use hashtag Podwarp. We will see that. If you have a question for us, you can tweet it to us. You can use the hashtag Podwarp or just shoot us an email at podwarp1999@comicostrich.com. I know Tom used to do these sign-offs, but I haven't been here for 1,000 years, so I'm gonna do the sign-off. So screw everyone. You guys are it's so good hearing your voices again. I cannot believe.
Thanks, Dad.
Gonzo, I missed you the most. This has been Podwarp 1999. We have been Mark Meckes, Jim Francis, Tom Truskowski, David Davis, and Ben Padden. Where can we find us online? Let's go around and do that again. God, you can tell it's been a while since we did this.
Yeah.
Wellofsouls.com.
EntirePriceEnterprises.com.
Cosmic-.com.
StationV3.com.
Ben.Padden. Nope, that's even wrong. I didn't quite get my, that's my email address. BenPadden.net.
Awesome.
That, all right. That is how we pod warp. We will set a course into the future, and that is the worst sign off of any podcast. We're going to plot a course for the next time where we will meet you. We will rendezvous at the next episode. Let's never. No. Tom, you say it properly.
It.
Credits.
And we're out. Perfect. Perfect. I love it.
The intro and outro music is Earth's Assault on the Central AI by Tetix from the album Technology Crisis. A link to Tetix's website is available on the Podwarp 1999 website.